Hello, and welcome to the Brothers of Tamriel podcast. I'm your host, Jay Rumberg, and I'm joined here by my brother, Mission Maniac. Here we will be covering all the basics of Elder Scrolls Online. We're going to talk anything from news to dungeon mechanics and even builds. We're going to cover everything from the beginner level to the veteran level and everything in between. So this will give you a good solid foundation of the understanding of the game. Hopefully this will help you succeed a little better. Sit back, relax, and enjoy while we delve into the world of Nern.
Oh boy, welcome back. It is August 24th. It is Saturday morning. Actually, it's Saturday afternoon for me.
It is.
Just about noon out here where I'm at. How's everybody doing today? We are the Brothers of Tamriel. My name is Jay Rumberg. I'm joined here by my older brother, Mission Maniac.
That's me.
How you been doing, Mission?
I've been doing pretty good. I've had the last couple days off out here in Massachusetts, hanging out. Been getting a lot of playtime in for the days off. Finally got my Vhof skin.
Nice. And why are you in Massachusetts? I'll tell you a little bit about that.
Because I have the worst job in the world. I move people for a living, so it causes... I drive a semi, so it causes me to travel all over the country, moving these people from home to home and whatnot. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I just got some downtime. I had my last job out here in Massachusetts. Moved somebody from, Missouri. Yeah, Missouri out here in Massachusetts.
Very nice.
Yep. Other than that, I just been, got my Magplar to level 50.
Nice.
Stomping some face with him.
Oh, good.
Got my Vhof skin. Yeah. What have you been up to in game, brother?
Still been knocking my writs out every day. Still doing the dailies for different zones to try to get the motifs. Because I'm going after the Grandmaster Crafter achievement here, and I want that title so bad. But I'm
it's a lot of work.
It is a ton of work, but I'm almost there. I've got 3 days left on my research, and then I'll have everything researched in the game. And then I just need to finish out my... just a few more master writs to do. And then I just need to do... get the full motif. The 50 different motif styles that I'm working on.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a ton of them. That's
gonna, oh my god.
That's going to take some time for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I only know like... maybe 5 full motif styles.
Yeah, I'm closing in on that 50, so we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. You'll get it. I'll get it eventually one day. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
It just takes a lot of time. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, so, we got a pretty good show today, but before we get into the show, J-Ro and myself received some very kind words from a listener, J-Ro, go ahead and tell the people what we got sent to us.
So we got an email. We're going into the mail segment here. We got an email from a gentleman named Robert Poe. He is a fan of the show, and I'm just going to read this for you guys. It says, "Hi guys, I love the new podcast, especially the tips on builds and dungeons, as those are the two things I have recently started paying more attention to. I also love the little tidbit of news to stay on top of what is happening. Keep up the good work," is what he says. And he goes on to saying, "As a beginner to builds and dungeons, I do have a question." He's asking about the Mag Sorc. He's currently working on the Mag Sorc, and he's wondering if someone is strong enough, can they solo entire dungeons and even zone bosses? And to simply put, the answer to that is yes, you can.
100% yes.
Yeah, I solo world bosses every day, and I solo dungeons about every day. You know, there are if I can pop into, you know, some of the later game dungeons are a little more difficult and stuff, but yeah, most of them, most of the base game ones, they're pretty much soloable.
Yeah, and also he does ask in there if there are world bosses that you can't solo, and yeah, there are a couple. I know there's a couple Somerset ones that are, if they're a little difficult to solo. Not saying you can't solo all the bosses, because I'm sure there's players out there that, you know, they can stomp on every boss in the game, go 1v1 against a dragon, and be perfectly fine. But
right,
yeah, those are your top gear, just balls of the wall kind of players,
sweaty ass players.
Yeah, basically, for the most part, yeah, you can solo most bosses in the game. Other bosses, yes, it's very difficult to solo them.
Yep. So he was wondering, to get to that point, are there some sets that he should be running? Are there some things that he should be doing as a solo PvE player? Which I'm sure that's not all he does, but in this aspect, yeah, we're going to be talking about the solo PvE Magsork. Just real quick, just to touch on it. I know we touched on it on our first episode, but our audio quality wasn't quite there, so some things might have been missed. But as far as solo PvE goes, as with the Magsork, since it is my main character, what I like to do is I go for a max Magicka build for solo PvE. So I run a couple sets that, and these sets can totally vary for you, but I run a couple sets that park me right around 50k Magicka with about 1800 recovery. So I never really...
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I never really run out of Magicka in that regard, so... the more Magicka you have, the higher damage you're going to be doing, and, you know, the more sustain you are going to have. So that's what I would say. Try to just start off with a good resource pool, a nice thick resource pool. And also, the skills, the active abilities that you can run are very, very versatile. You can run whatever you want to an extent. Make sure you have your AoEs, your spammables, your execute, and everything all like that. It's nice to have some CCs in there. For me, like the Shattering Prison one's a really nice one. It's a conal, and it'll just immobilize your enemies, park them right in place, so you don't have to worry about them creeping up on you and attacking you in melee range. Another thing that I like to do is you should definitely be running a shield of some kind.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to increase your survivability by a ton. So make sure you got a shield. Make sure you got your AoEs. Make sure you got some decent ultimates on there. If you need to run some kind of a defensive ultimate, go ahead and do that. Otherwise, yeah, you should be good with just a ton of Magicka, get a little recovery, and get those active skills, run a shield and stuff like that, and you should be fine. If you're going up against a really tough boss by yourself, make sure you play a little more conservatively. Make sure you're not running in all willy-nilly and just dying instantly. Hang back a little bit for the Magsork. Hang back, try not to take all that damage and stuff, and just kind of take your time with it. Really, it's going to take longer, obviously, if you're by yourself. So definitely just take your time with it. And that should help you succeed a little bit. But we definitely appreciate the email, Mr. Poe, and we hope to hear from you soon again after.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really, really nice getting that email.
Yeah, definitely. He was very excited about the next episode of the show, and we're finally getting a good following of listeners and stuff, so this is awesome. We're really we're over the moon about the attention and the all the shout outs we've been getting and everything, so we're really glad that everybody's open to the show and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. And also, I want to touch a little bit on the solo PvE Magsork. A couple sets you could grab are Necropotence, or Necropotence, however you want to pronounce it, Crafty Alfheek. Those two sets paired together will give you a huge Magicka pool. Also, what for newer players, it's really nice if you run the double pet build as well, and turn your get the Twilight Matriarch. It's got a huge heal. I know J-Rome runs it. And then your imp will just, it just helps you do extra damage. I don't play the Magsorb a whole lot anymore, but when I did, I liked running. I didn't have Crafty Alfheek at the time because Elsewhere wasn't out, but I did run Necropotence and like Mother Sorrow or Julianos or something like that. But that shield, like J-Rome pointed out, if you're solo and stuff, yeah, Harden Ward, Harness Magicka, whatever you got to use. Make sure you got a shield on your bar.
Yep, that's pretty much, that'll really gear you up for success. So.
Oh, and real quick, episode one, like J-Rum pointed out, the audio kind of got messed up. So we're actually, next week, we're going to start back over on the Magsorb. So we're going to re-record the Magsorb now that we got our audio a little bit better.
Yep, that's the plan. So moving
Other
on.
Other than that, what's the news?
Yep, moving on to the news. We don't have much to discuss today. We got just a few different things here. So we've got the Dragonhold community. Join us in Seattle and be among the first to play Dragonhold. Will you be in Seattle during PAX West? Join us for our next ESO community event and be one of the first to play the upcoming Dragonhold DLC game pack and explore the region of Southern Elsewhere. When is this? It is August 31st from 5 p.m. Pacific time until 9 p.m. Pacific time.
You're buying my plane ticket, right?
Nope. And where is it at? It's at the First and Bell, which is 2218 First Avenue, Seattle, Washington, 98121. That's your address if you guys are looking to get there and join everybody in PAX West out there on the Pacific side of things. So at the event, you can play ESO Dragonhold and Update 24 before they even hit the public test server and enjoy complimentary food and drink. In addition, we plan to have giveaways, including Elsewhere collectible coins, moon sugar soda, hopefully that has drugs in it, and codes for this year's convention exclusive hot-blooded Bantam Guar pet. Finally, members of both the ESO community and dev teams can answer your questions and talk about the game. Relax in Southern Elsewhere with us. Anybody can turn up on the day of the community event with no PAX West badge required. But if you'd like to guarantee your chance to explore the Southern Elsewhere zone, keep an eye out for our forums for the sign-up details. Now that pretty much covers the August 31st PAX West event. Next thing I'd like to cover is the community-made websites, which is kind of interesting. Discover some of the amazing community-made and run websites created for those looking to get the most out of the Elder Scrolls Online. So the ESO community is incredible at supporting each other with streams, video guides, and articles, and in-game guilds. But they also create amazing websites that cover a wide variety of topics, including item sets, housing, costumes, and outfits, role-playing, and mods. If you're looking for some great community-made websites to help you get the most out of your gameplay, you can see some, but not all, of our favorites below during this ESO community-made websites. Just go to the forums and check it out, folks. They got sets, they've got role-playing, they've got all kinds of good websites in there. So that pretty much covers the websites. That's something that you guys will have to look into yourselves. I'm not going to go over each and every individual one because there are a lot of community-made websites. So the next piece of news that I want to move on to is community guide, Scalebreaker Special. So, update your builds, and jump into Scalebreaker's new dungeons with these brand new guides from the ESO community. Dungeon guides include Alcast, Lair of Marsalok dungeon guide. Alcast breaks down the challenging boss fights found within the Lair of Marsalok dungeon on veteran and hard mode difficulties. If you're interested in a similar guide for Moongrave Fane, guess what? Alcast has that too. Fextra Life, Scalebreaker Breakdown, one of the biggest overhauls yet. The team over at Fextra Life has put together this huge breakdown of the changes and additions coming with Scalebreaker and Update 23. For some builds, check out Zynode, the Toxicity Advanced Stamina DK PvE build. Zynode shares an updated build for his main character that dishes out a ton of damage over time.
Oh, yeah.
Next one is Urzel Gaming, something like that. Urzel Gaming. Magicka Warden PvE build, Ice Queen. Urzel has put together this fun and flexible build that features a heavy emphasis on frost damage. Next one down, as you guys might have guessed, it's Lyko. Stamina Necromancer VMA Daggers PvE build. Lyko makes use of Update 23's changes to the Maelstrom Arena dual-wield daggers to come up with some impressive DPS. For build details, check out Lyko's video descriptions.
Yeah, Lyko is he's my main source. Whenever I need kind of a guide in rotation or build, I go to Lyko. Lyko is an amazing, amazing DPS artist. I mean, this guy just pumps out some high, high numbers.
Yep, he is. He's got the DPS down to a science, that's for sure. The next one here is Hack the Minotaur. It's a Stamina Templar solo PvE build called the Gladiator. Hack showcases his solo-friendly Stamplar build that'll allow you to take on some of Tamriel's group content all alone. So, for that one email we just read, this is kind of touching base on that. He was interested in a solo PvE build, but for the Magsork, so this is the same idea except for the Stamplar. So, moving on. Snicker. He has a nice Stamblade PvP build for Scalebreaker. If you're looking for a new two-handed bow build, Snicker has you covered with a lethal-looking Stamina Nightblade. Next one is Zabulous. Strongest Stamsorc PvP build. Zabulous brings a tanky Stamsorc build that makes use of Cyrodiil's Crest set and can deal a surprising amount of damage. And to tell you the truth, I have a DK that I utilize Cyrodiil's Crest, and it is really nice because that allows you...
It's a good set.
Yeah, you heal each time you block an attack, so it's really nice to just sit there and hold block and get some health back while you're recouping some resources and stuff like that. So Cyrodiil's Crest is not a bad set for PvP, and you can find all those on YouTube. Next one up is Inklings. I'm sure everybody knows Inklings. Scalebreaker Rip Mule build. If you're looking to speed your way through your crafting dailies, Inklings gives you a unique build to help you hashtag do your writs. That's it for this month. The ESO community has done an amazing job creating new guides for Scalebreaker and Update 23. And if you've crafted or enjoyed a guide you think the rest of the community should see, share it with us on Twitter at TSOOnline, Instagram, and Facebook. Or even share it here with us on our Twitter at the Brothers of Tamriel cast on Twitter. Or you can share it with Mission Maniac, or you can share it with Jay Rumberg. Which is at Jeff Another Shot and at
Mission XX Maniac.
Bingo. So that about covers the news. Moving on, our next thing we got on our docket, Mission, what do you got for us?
Well, we're covering the Stamblade, but since this is a little bit of a shorter news week. I'm going to just jump into the dungeon mechanics first, and then we'll do the Stam Blade afterwards. And then, yeah, we'll finish up the show and whatnot. So, our dungeon for this week is Darkshade Caverns 1.
Here we go.
Buckle up. So, this dungeon is easy. Yeah. As the last couple episodes have been. You got your typical four bosses. The first boss that we're going to jump into is Foreman. Oh, God. Why do these names have to hurt me so?
They do it on purpose.
Foreman Lothan. Lothan. I don't know. We're going to call him Foreman.
Foreman.
Yeah, Foreman. So this boss is not that bad. The only thing that he really does that's more annoying than anything else is he will move around. But other than that, I mean, just stay it. You know, don't stand in stupid. Burn down the ads, burn down the boss. Now, there's a trick. I'm going to give you a little tip. If you, by chance, go into this dungeon with Magicka DPS or a ranged, say, bow stamina build, where the Foreman comes out of the doors, he's standing on a ramp. If you guys stay back about, I don't know, maybe the radius of Volley, Endless Hail, if you stay back away from him about that far, everybody in the group has to do it, though. If everybody stays back, Tank range taunts him, he will not move around. He will stay on that hill as long as you guys don't get close enough to him. If you're all ranged, you can literally just burn him down with ranged DPS and he will not move. Yeah, he'll just stand still as long as you guys don't get too close to him. Moving on to the next boss is the Hive Lord. This guy, you're gonna have a bunch of Kawamas to face with him that he kind of summons. But for the most part, he is another boss that just tank him right in the middle of everything and just burn him down. Now, I will say, if you are too far away from him, like, say, you're a ranged DPS that's scared to stand too close to the boss, he will jump at you if you're too far away. Whoever is the farthest DPS or farthest player away, he's going to jump. And the other thing that he does is he will do this little ability where he smashes his hands on the ground like he throws a tantrum, and that just needs to be interrupted. But other than that, it's an easy, easy boss. Moving on to the big old Bullnetch y'all get to fight. I think his name's Groble. So on Darkshade 1, it's a gravy fight. Like, I mean, a fight could not get any more simpler than this fight.
It's super easy.
Yeah, just stay out of his AoEs. He puts a poison AoE underneath of him. Just stay out of that and just, I mean, honestly, just have your tank taunt him and hold him right in place, and it's literally a stack and burn. Like, couldn't get more stack and burn than Groble. And then you got a Cutting Sphere after that. This one here, he can actually hit pretty hard because he's got a Whirlwind attack, but just don't stand close to him, you know? Don't be standing on the tank, and you'll be all right. There's a couple Dwarven Spider adds, and I would kill those first, you know, focus. Unless the tank's on point and he pulls them, you know, pulls all those spiders in with the boss and, like, talons them down or whatever, you know, CCs them, that works really, really good. And then you move on to the last boss. This name. Ooh, Sentinel of Rikugams. Rikugams.
Nailed it.
I don't know. I wonder if that R is silent. But it's Rkugamz. Or if it's just Kugams.
Rikugams.
Something like that. He's a big ol' Centurion. You know, there's really... trying to think of his attacks and his spinning attack, that's the one that hurts.
Yeah, he's got another spinning one.
Yeah. Yep. He will extend his arms and he will straight up just spin 360s and just he'll get whether the tank aggroes him or not, he doesn't care. He's gonna go after who he wants to kill and he's gonna come after you. And all you gotta do is just kite him around, you know, just running around, don't get, if you're a DPS, do not get in his AoE because it will burn you down so fast, you'll probably cry.
Yeah.
And the hard mode on this boss is, there's nothing different. You hit the scroll, and I think he's got a little bit more health. I honestly think that's it. That's Darkshade 1. Once you complete it, you'll get your Monster Helm, Sentinel of Rikugams. The one-piece item adds 2% healing done. Two pieces, when you heal a friendly target, you have a 10% chance to summon a Dwemer Spider that heals for 1,000 health, and restores 500 stamina to you and your allies within 5 meters every 1 second for 8 seconds, and this effect can occur once every 15 seconds. Now, this healing monster set, I still see to this day in Elsewhere patch, I still see it being used. It is a nice monster set. The only problem with it is that when that spider is procced or summoned, however you want to phrase it, he puts an AoE around him, and you have to be in that AoE to get that. Kind of like Bogdan, almost.
Yeah.
Just not as big as a heal. That's your dungeon for the week. Jerem, you got anything you want to add on this dungeon?
No, this is like we said at the beginning of our casts, our first episode, these are the base game. We're starting with the easiest ones and moving on to the hardest ones, so this is just another one of those beginner dungeons that even the vet hard mode isn't really too bad, so you guys get in there and you guys should take care of it pretty easily.
Yeah, like I said, the hard mode in this one, just read the scroll, and I think the only difference in this one is he has just a smidgen more health. I think that's the only difference,
if
I remember correctly. We can move on to the Scamblade. Do you want to cover the passives this week, or...?
Yep, I'll cover the passives. Let me get my Scamblade all pulled up real quick. Okay, got the passives all pulled up, which last week we did kind of cover. We hit on the Nightblade's passives a little bit, but we were kind of geared towards the Magicka Nightblade. Now we're going to be gearing towards the Stamina Nightblade, and we'll be kind of talking about how to utilize these in a more stamina-friendly way. So, starting off, we're just going to assume that all the passives have been put in, so they're already Tier 2 passives. And so this is the end result of having all your passives put in. So, starting at the top, this is the Assassination skill line. And the first one we've got, we're just going to kind of breeze through these real quick. Since I know that we've covered them last week, but we're just going to have a little more in-depth stamina discussion on them. So, Master Assassin 2 is your first passive that we're going to be covering. This increases your weapon and spell damage by 10% while you are sneaking or invisible. So in the stamina version, we're talking weapon damage. This increases weapon damage by 10%, which is really nice because that's baked right into the class. And it also increases the duration of the stun from sneak by 100%. So when you're going to stun your enemy, make sure that you're in sneak, because it will increase the duration of the stun. It'll double it. It'll increase it by 100%. So that's really nice. In most things with the Nightblade, the Stamina Nightblade, you're going to be wanting to do all of your stuff while in sneak or in invis. One of the two. So they both give you a little buff to your Magicka or your stamina, weapon damage, and your crit, and so we're going to just touch on all that right now. Next one up is Executioner. When an enemy dies within 2 seconds of being damaged by one of your assassination abilities, you restore 1,876 stamina. Okay, or this will also apply to Magicka. It's just whichever's higher, but again, we're talking about the Stam Sword, or the Stam Nightblade, excuse me. And so with this assassination passive, this executioner, you're going to want to use the assassination ability while they are just about to die, because you want to get that you want them to die within 2 seconds of being damaged by your assassination ability. That way you can hit that restore, just a little bit of sustain help there for you. It'll restore that 1876 stamina. So that's just a little tip. Make sure you use that assassination ability within 2 seconds of that enemy about to die. Make sure you know your timings and stuff. So moving on to the next one is pressure points. And this one is going to increase your weapon critical rating by 438 for each assassination ability slotted. So that could be, if let's say you have all 5 of your active abilities, assassination abilities, and also let's say you have your ultimate, you're using the assassination ultimate with it too, and that one is your soul harvest ultimate, and there are different morphs of that one. That will increase your crit ratings by 438 for each one of those that you have slotted on that bar. So the more you have, the higher your crit rating is going to be, your weapon crit. So you definitely want to load up on assassination abilities for whichever bar that you want your crit to be on. Next one we got here is hemorrhage, and this increases your crit damage by 10%. There again, we're getting more crit damage from the Nightblade. The Nightblade is all about crit and burst and sneaky, sneaky, stabby, stabby. So during your crit damage, it grants you and your group, don't mind my dog flopping her ears, grants you and your group minor savagery, increasing your weapon crit rating by 1320 for 20 seconds. So this is huge. This is one of my favorite forms of the minor buffs, and it's built into almost every class where you get your minor buff and you stack it with your major buff. That way you really get that crit rating up there. So the nice thing about it is that it lasts for 20 seconds, and it's for your whole group. So that's a really nice group passive there. Again, that one was hemorrhage. So increases your crit damage by 10% just right off the bat, and then it increases your crit rating by 13, gives you that minor savagery for 20 seconds. So that's just for dealing crit damage. So with all that crit rating that you're getting in your passives, you're gonna be bound to crit at some point within one rotation. So you're going to definitely be getting that minor savagery, and then all you got to do is get that major savagery to get them to stack on top of each other. We are now moving into the shadow skill line. First one up of the passives is refreshing shadows. This just flat out increases health, stamina, and magicka recovery by 15%. So that's pretty nice, just a flat out increase to your recovery by 15% of everything. Next one down is your shadow barrier. Casting a shadow ability grants you major resolve and major ward for 6 seconds. And as you guys know, these major buffs increase your physical and spell damage by 5280. And the duration is increased by 25% for each armor, each piece of heavy armor that's equipped. So the more heavy armor, you want to pepper in a little bit of heavy armor. So for the stand blade, what I would say is run your 5 medium, and maybe run, if you don't have the undaunted skill line completely maxed out, I would say do the 5 medium, maybe 2 heavy, and that will increase the duration of this major ward and major resolve by another 50%. So definitely have some type of heavy armor going on in there too. So moving on, we're next passive is Dark Vigor. Again, we're talking tier 2 passives, so this just flat out increases your max health by 3% for each shadow ability slotted. So if you guys are looking to increase your max health, and you will definitely be using some shadow abilities, this is just going to be a nice little increase to your health. Next passive up is Dark Veil. And this increases the duration of your shadow abilities by 2 seconds. So that's a pretty nice one, because all the shadow abilities that you need to use are kind of the big ones. The active abilities, they're the big ones for the Nightblade. As far as your shadowy disguise, your surprise attack, and even your aspect of terror, which is your hard CC, it's your fear. And that'll all increase the duration of those by 2 seconds. So that is very, very nice. Next skill line for the Nightblade, Stamblade, is Siphoning. And the first passive here is Catalyst. After drinking a potion, you gain 20 ultimate. That's pretty nice. So every potion you drink, you're gaining 20 ultimate, which is kind of huge. So make sure you're using those potions on cooldown. Next one up is your Magic of Flood, which doesn't help you too much with the Stam, but it increases your max Magicka by 8% while the Siphoning ability is slotted. So even though you are going to be a Stam Blade, let's say, you're going to need a little bit of Magicka, because some of the morphs don't have a stamina version of the morph, such as your Shadowy Disguise. That's a Magicka ability. So you need to have a little bit of Magicka to be able to use your invis. Next passive down is Soul Siphoner. This increases the healing done by 3% for each siphoning ability slotted. So as you guys can probably pick up on, a lot of these passives have some prerequisites to them. So for instance, this one is for each siphoning ability slotted. We covered one that was for each piece of heavy armor worn. Another one for each piece of for each ability of the assassination line on your bar. You're getting all these different bonuses coming in from all kinds of places that are just based off of what the way you have your bar set up. So you definitely want to take a look at all these passives and see where all your buffs are coming from. See where your increases to your timings and your increases to your healing done, damage done, crit done, everything, where it's all coming from, and then kind of go off of that and synergize them all the best you can. Next one, and the last one we got here, is called Transfer. Casting a siphoning ability generates 2 ultimate, and this effect can occur every 4 seconds. So for each siphoning ability that you are casting, you're going to be generating 2 ultimate every 4 seconds. So there again, there's your ultimate recovery right there. So you're getting more and more ultimate recovery. You're getting your crit. You're getting your major resolve, major ward, all straight from your passives. So definitely make sure you read those passives and use your active abilities that coincide with those passives. Mission, you got anything to add to the Stamblade?
With the passives, you know, just make sure you, like he was saying, make sure you read through those passives and make sure you're utilizing your passives the best that you can, especially for solo content. When you're doing solo content, you want to utilize as much as you can of whatever class you're playing, and that falls directly into your passives.
Yep, exactly. How about, let's move on to the builds for the Stamina Nightblade. What do you have to say about, you got any particular builds in mind for that'll help these players in different situations?
So, you can always start out with the basic, which is Hundings. Hundings and Nightmother's Gaze. So, both these sets are great beginner sets. They're both crafted, which makes it even that much easier to acquire. I personally like running Briarheart if you can dedicate the time to go to Hrothgar and farm it up. Briarheart and Nightmother's Gaze is still good. But again, you want to get into that top tier, best in slot build. It is Reliquin and Advancing right now. Next patch, the stuff is going to be changing. But as always, Reliquin, all divines, body pieces, if that's what you're wearing for body. Your advancing, most people are running triple bloodthirsty on their jewelry now, double daggers and infused maelstrom staff on the, or sorry, maelstrom bow on the back bar with the Velidreth monster set. Now, to fully optimize your medium armor passives, you're going to want to wear 7 pieces of medium armor. So everything, head, shoulders, legs, chest, all of it, all medium, all divines. And that'll get you your best output.
Yep, that'll have, all those are going to increase your crit ratings. So the more medium you got, the higher your crit's going to be, the higher your crit rating, the higher your crit damage. And we could even go into, like, as far as races, like, if you choose Khajiit, that will increase your crit rating even more. So there are a ton of different ways to increase the crit within the Nightblade.
Oh, absolutely. And with the races, glad you brought that up. So Orc is the meta race right now for stamp builds. However, Khajiit is a very, very close second. I mean, it's the DPS difference is, I think it's like 2K. It's nothing to like freak out over, unless of course you're a mid-maxer, then you'll want to run the Orc with the blue food, the lava foot. And your Mundus Stone, as long as your crit percentage is over, and this is for Stam and Mag, as long as your crit percentage is 50 or above percent, run the Shadow. If you're down at like 42 or 45%, you're going to want to run the Thief to get your crit chance up, because you want to crit as often as possible.
Yeah.
The rotation for the Stam Blade, nothing super crazy. You'll start off by buffing up, popping your potion, let that, like I said last week, let that cool down to about anywhere between 24 and 20 seconds, and then you'll start your rotation. So it'll be Endless Hail, Caltrops, Poison Inject, Bar Swap, Rending Slashes, and then 5 Surprise Attacks. Now these Surprise Attacks are going to, or your Light Attacks are going to proc your Spectral Bow, and just like last week with the Mag Blade, you're going to count that Spectral Bow as a surprise attack. So again, if you do surprise attack, spectral bow, that's 3. Surprise attack, spectral bow, that's 5. And then right before you bar swap, throw down rearming trap. So on your 5th ability, light attack, rearming trap, bar swap, and that'll cancel the rearming trap, animation, and then start your rotation over, which you have to play with it a little bit. It's been a while since I played the Stam Blade. You might only want to do 4 Stam Bolts instead of 5, since you're throwing Rearming Trap in there, just to even everything out. But ultimates, in cap, and you can run Dawnbreaker on your front bar. And with the Dawnbreaker, the reason why we're running Dawnbreaker, and for me personally, the reason why I run all my Fighter's Guild abilities on my front bar with my dual wield bar is because the Fighter's Guild has a passive to where each ability that you have slotted increases your weapon damage. So, like my Dawnbreaker and my Fighter or my Rearming Trap are going to be on the front bar to increase my weapon damage, because I'm not doing my single target damage is on my front bar, it's not on my back bar, so I don't care necessarily about my weapon damage on my back bar. And also with the Maelstrom Bow, the reason why we run it infused is because we run the weapon damage enchant on it. And I think it was last patch, not the Elsewhere patch, but the patch before, they changed it to where Endless Hail actually will continuously proc the weapon damage enchant. So you're constantly, it's procing off cooldown as long as you keep that Endless Hail down. Use end cap off cooldown. I mean, as soon as you get it, use it, because it buffs your attacks. And yeah, once you get the dummy or the target that you're fighting down to 25% or less, instead of doing your 4 or 5 spam bulls, you're going to switch it up and do 4 or 5 impales, the execute for the Nightblade and the Stam Blade. And that's pretty much it for the Stam Blade. It's pretty simple rotation. Make sure you light attack in between each ability. And the biggest thing with the Stam Blade is the sustain. As long as you keep your, I think it's leeching strikes, is that the Stam version, or it's siphoning strikes, one of the two, whichever one it is, as long as you keep that up, I think I figured it out to where I could do, I think I could do two rotations and then reapply it on the third.
Yeah, I believe it's leeching strikes.
Okay, yeah, leeching strikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's either two or three rotations. But just, you'll tinker with it, you'll see it fall off, and then you'll know, you know, right about where it needs to be reapplied. You want to keep that up as much as possible, because that is the Nightblade's main sustain. I mean, it's a great ability. It restores so much stamina. But if you let it fall off, if you do a rotation without it, you're gonna, towards the end of the dummy, you're gonna be hurting for stam.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Other than that, that kind of covers our stam blade. That covers a little bit of the news that we were talking about. I did want to touch on a little bit more that I've been doing in game. I finally ranked up again in the Alliance War rank. I made it to Colonel in my PvP rank. So, I've been spending some time in Cyrodiil, just taking some resources, taking some keeps. I think it was Thursday night. I didn't have to work on Friday morning, so I was able to stay up all night, and I just farted around in Cyrodiil with a pretty big zone LFG group that we got put together, and we got Volendrung, we got the hammer, and we just started taking keeps like crazy.
Oh, you guys got the weapon?
Yep, we got it. And we
man.
And it takes about three or four swings on a door, and that door goes down.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
You know, I know you guys hear me, like, make stabs at PvP. I'm not a PvPer. I'm okay at PvP, but I will tell you guys, if you get into Cyrodiil with a group, especially with a friendly group and not a toxic group, Cyrodiil is a blast. It is so much fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why I've been spending so much time in there. I've been wanting to get my PvP skills all honed in, and I finally got a good build going on, and now my BGs, when I'm in BGs, I'm usually at the top of the medal point score of every match that I'm in. Occasionally I'm not, but within the last year, I would say my PvP skills have definitely grown exponentially. Just from
100%. I remember begging you to do PvP with me, and now it's almost flopped. I don't do PvP, and you're constantly trying to get me into doing PvP, and when I do run BGs with you, or we go into Cyrodiil together, I'm blown away by your survivability, your damage output. I mean, yeah, you've grown like 100 times in the PvP world.
Yeah, it's taken a lot of doing and a lot of learning and stuff, but yep, I'm in a decent point with PvP. Got a good, solid understanding with it, and I finally made that Colonel rank, and so I'm just going to keep on going, and hopefully I can reach my goal. I plan to be Emperor this year sometime. We're going to make our Emperor run, and I'm going to try to get that knocked out, so I got that under my belt, and hopefully we just keep on chugging along in Cyrodiil and keep on trying not to die, because it's a nightmare out there sometimes.
Oh, yeah, it can be.
And we will do a Cyrodiil episode in the future, where we'll talk about, like, different things you should be doing based on, like, your group size, based on, like, what else do we need to worry about? We need to worry about, like, different sieges and stuff. We'll get into all that on a later episode, and we'll help you guys get your
fighting tactics. I mean, the way you fight in PvP is just so different than the way you do things in PvE. It is a completely different animal. It's almost not even the same game.
Yep.
And like Jug J-Rum said, we are going to go into the PvP side of things later, once we kind of get through the PvE side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Real quick, Jerem, just to kind of hook Robert up from the email, just in case he's interested, what are you running on your Magsork for PvP?
On my Magsork, kind of depends on exactly what I'm doing. I've got about four different sets that I flip around, depending on if I'm in a BG or if I'm in Cyrodiil. depending on if which type of game I'm in and in BGs and stuff like that. But for the most part, I like to run Rattle Cage and Fortified Brass. I like Rattle Cage for the major sorcery that it gives me, just because it opens up that I don't have to run Power Surge to get that major sorcery, and I can put a sustain ability there instead. So what I like to do is run Rattle Cage, gives you a good amount of spell damage, and run all Impen Fortified Brass, and then I run, I don't even run a full monster set. I run one piece Lord Warden, one piece Pirate Skeleton, because they both give you an extra like 2,500 resistances, so that way I'm over cap for resistances, and I'm also sitting around 4,000 spell damage somewhere in there. So if you've got a nice high spell damage, you got nice high resistances, then it's just a matter of learning your class, learning when to block, when not to block, those kind of things. You know, you guys can block. If you block a stun, you're not going to end up getting stunned, so there are some things to learn with PvP, but we'll cover all that in a later episode. But for the most part, for PvP, that is what I like to run. I'll either run that, or I'll run, if I'm in like a BG where I need lots of CCs, I like to run a hard CC and a soft CC, which is a stun and immobilize, and I'll run them on different bars, and that's great for like capture the relic, because I'll throw my mines down on top of the relic, and whenever someone tries to come up and grab our relic, it immobilizes them, which gives me just that extra couple seconds to get to them to bash them, so they don't end up taking our relic. And if a whole group moves in on the relic or something like that, I'll just throw a negate down right there and just melt all of them, because it silences them all, and you know that they're going to be going for that relic. Just nail them with a negate and just melt them all down right there. That's kind of what I like to do in BGs and stuff like that. In Cyrodiil, I definitely like to run rapids, because that place is enormous and you can't get around anywhere quick, so faster you are in Cyrodiil, the better, that's for sure. And I'll always stay with the group, no matter where Absolutely. They're going. Just stick together, and you guys are going to do a lot better than if you try to go being a hero, going solo.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I told you about that VHOF run or not, but it was part of my core group that I run with, and we started at 7 o'clock Central Time, and the core hours end at 9 o'clock Central Time. So I was in there from 7 o'clock Central Time until 4 o'clock in the morning today before I finally got it. It was, it took us a while. Yeah, it took us a while to get a solid group together. We kind of had to weed through a couple people that didn't really know what they were doing, because I like teaching people, but when I'm in a place for that long trying to get something, it's like, I get in the mood where like I don't want to teach right now. I just want to get this cleared so I can go to bed.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that covers it for the week. What do you think, J-Rum?
Yep, I think that's a good place to stop. We're approaching that 1 hour mark now, so where can they find you, Mission?
You can all find me at MissionXXManiac on Twitter. twitch.tv/missionxxmaniac. I did change my handle on Twitch. Did I say Twitch or did I say Twitter? I think I said Twitch.
You're good. Yep, you got it.
All right. Also, you can find me in-game, Xbox NA server, missionxxmaniac. And then, as always, give us an email.
Yep, we got
brothersofTamrielpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, exactly. We want to hear from you guys, folks. We're starting to get some emails rolling in, and if we see a good email, we're going to play it on the show, and we'll talk about it, ask us questions, and we'll answer your questions. Hopefully, we'll try to do it on the very next episode that we get that email. So we want to put you guys up at the forefront, and we want our audience to be our number one. You guys are our number one supporters. We do this for you. and because we are in love with this game and we want to just share the knowledge that we've learned over the last three to four years of playing, and yeah, whatever we can do to help you, that helps us too in the end.
That's why we're doing this podcast. Is this is a game that we love. Me and J-Rum talk every single morning, and we talk for 2 to 3 hours, and we literally talk ESO pretty much the entire time. I mean, we are both severely addicted to this game. This game is just, this is what we do, like, when neither one of us are working or we're not, you know, not tending to the loved ones, we're on ESO.
Yep.
And we want to help you, which is why we decided to make this podcast. There's things, you know, there's great, amazing podcasts out there, and me and J-Rum have always talked about doing it, and we dove in, we did it, we started doing it, and we're loving the feedback, and we want to keep it rolling in.
Yeah.
With that being said, J-Rum, where can they find you at?
You guys can find me, I'm over at Twitter, at JeffAnotherShot. You can find me in game, Xbox NA. My gamer tag is Jay Rumberg. You guys can find me on Twitch. I stream about every day. You can find me on twitch.tv/Jay Rumberg. And also make sure you guys follow the podcast Twitter, which is at Brothers of Tamriel. Our handle is at Brothers Cast, I believe.
Yeah, you know what? Let me double check.
At Brothers of Tam, I think is what we changed it to.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. At Brothers of Tam, yep.
Yep, so follow us over there at Brothers of Tam. And yeah, we want to hear from you. Shoot us some DMs, just tweet us out, you know, whatever you guys got to do. We want to hear from you guys, so keep up the good support that you guys have been showing. It's been overwhelming. We've been getting some warm welcomes. We're still the new guys on the podcast block, but we are a couple veteran players, so we do know our shit in that regard. So also, we do, Mission and I, we co-run a guild. We're both guild masters, so you guys can find us. Our guild is Molag's Mercenaries. Just find us in game and shoot us a message. And we both have the Xbox app on our phones, so even if we're not in game, we will get the message and we'll get back to you ASAP. And we're open to anyone to join our guild. It's full of veteran players. We've got some beginner players that we're helping out. We'll do everything we can to help you guys out, help you succeed out there in Tamriel. So it's a good, solid community without any trolls or anything. And, we run a tight ship. We do trials and stuff here and there. We do dungeon runs. We have all kinds of stuff. We do occasionally world boss runs. So we just have a good time. It's a fun time over there. We've got a Discord also, so whenever you guys join the guild, we'll get you in a Discord. We've got a band page. We'll get you on the band page. And then you guys can stay up to date on all the latest Molag's Mercenaries stuff, news and stuff.
Yeah, see what kind of craziness we're getting into.
Exactly. Other than that, Mission, you got any last-minute comments?
I don't think so. You know, just as we've already reiterated, you know, thank you guys so much for the love and support. I think that basically is going to wrap it up. So, you know, travel safe and fight hard out there.
Yep. Happy hunting, guys. We will talk to you guys next time. Hopefully, we hear some more from you. So, we will see you later. Bye-bye.
See ya.